Welcome, friends, to The Generations. This is broadcast Kevin Swanson, your host with you. Bill Jack from Worldview Academy with me as well. And today I'd like to recommend that you as a family talk about economics. Why? Because gas prices are up and just about everything is up except for your paycheck. But, yeah. You know, these are times at which the entire nation is talking economy. The entire nation is talking inflation. Well, we need to talk the same thing, except we need to bring biblical principles to bear. And that's why I just released the book, How the World Runs, and your part in it, so that this would be of tremendous aid to help you in your conversations across the dinner table with your children as you talk about rising gas prices. Man, gas prices are way up. We're thinking about taking a trip to see my parents later on this summer, but it's going to cost $2,000 in gas to get there and back again. That's assuming $5, $6 a gallon for gas.
And some places it's closer to $7.
And you do remember it was about $2 a gallon or $2.50 a gallon, I'm going to say 2 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know what the problem is, don't you? Russia.
Yeah, it's Russia. Russia's doing this to us. Yeah, we blame it on lots of things. You can blame it on Russia, sure. But less than 2% of the U.S. oil supply comes from Russia.
What?
It's 2%.
What?
So, but okay,
what about Ukraine?
So 2% of $2 is what? About 4 cents.
4 cents.
So that would, okay. So if it was Russia, that would contribute about 4 cents. But Bill, gas has gone up more than 4 cents.
Yeah.
It's gone up to $5, $6 a gallon.
Yeah, you're putting
Can't just be Russia.
You're putting your 2 cents in there, aren't you?
Well, two reasons. First, you release $5 trillion into the economy over 2 years, an economy that's, you know, roughly $45 trillion over 2 years of gross national product. Okay, so you have an economy that runs $45 trillion of gross national product through the system over 2 years, but you add to that $5 trillion of money you printed out of thin air. That's about 10% of the $45 trillion of gross national product for 2 years. Now, we have 10% more money running through the economy, and now things cost 10% more. What happened? Everything's up 10%, and over the last 2 years, the Federal Reserve issued roughly 10% of the economy into the economy.
Might be some kind of connection.
There's a connection there. I think a 9-year-old can figure this out.
Yeah. The other thing is that the government, the current administration, has been hampering fossil fuel production. They've been hampering oil production. They shut down the pipeline that was going to bring oil through. And what else did they do? They turned our production on its head.
They sure did. Yep, they sure did. January 27th, 2021. And that was when gas prices were roughly $2.50, $3 a gallon, right? Okay, so back when gas prices $2.50, $3 a gallon, governments make it more difficult for domestic oil supplies to supply oil. More regulation, more controls. An executive order came on January 27, 2021, and that was just weeks after we elected President Biden to be the president of the United States. Now, we'd say that, you know, we wanted Joe Biden. We wanted really strict environmental policies. Americans are big on climate control. For some reason, they are. A fair percentage of Americans are really big on governments controlling the climate, as if governments could control the climate. The idea that, of course, man is producing enough carbon dioxide to affect the environment negatively, all of that is assumed, and therefore government will solve the problem for us. Now, that is a huge leap in logic. That is assuming lots of things, that an increase in carbon dioxide is bad for us. An increase in global temperatures was bad for us. That all of this was caused by human-caused influences upon our environment. See, assuming. And therefore, governments must step in and control the economy and control oil production to the point of shutting down the oil line from Canada, and to halt new oil gas leasing on federal onshore lands and offshore waters, That, according to this executive order that Biden introduced in January 27, 2021. So it's the president's fault, but it's not just the president's fault. It's the voters' fault because the voters voted for this because they're so excited about governments controlling the climate by shutting down oil production and evidently, you know, contributing something to a decline in the carbon dioxide, you know, issued by human caused sources, and that somehow this is going to improve life on planet Earth. We think, we hope, we assume. It's all foolishness. It's destructive. Bottom line on this is that the president of the United States is destructive. The democracy voting for President Biden to lead the nation is voting for the destruction of the economy, is voting for the destruction of a nation, is voting for the judgment of God upon a nation, especially as far as this president opposes God's laws at just about every single point. Now, whose fault is it that gas prices are going up? Well, it's our fault.
Yeah.
It's the democracy's fault. They voted for Joe Biden to violate God's laws, the Eighth Commandment, the Seventh Commandment, the Sixth Commandment, pretty much every commandment, with impunity. The idea is that we want a candidate to lead the nation who violates the laws of God. Now, some would say the ballot boxes have been compromised and such, and that may be, very well be the case. Wouldn't surprise me that a nation that involves itself in $5 trillion of quantitative easing over 2 years, a nation that kills babies, a nation that uses Planned Parenthood funding to kill babies, a nation that redistributes the wealth to the tune of trillions of dollars every year, would want to lie when it comes to the ballot box. It would not surprise me at all. But I would say maybe the first thing we need to do is repent of violating every other commandment, and then maybe someday we'll have honest elections as well. So I think that would maybe solve the issue. We're coming back to the matter of inflation in just a moment on the Generations broadcast. Stay with us.
What happens when a culture that was established and guided by biblical principles abandons the faith and seeks to live by its own wisdom? In his latest groundbreaking work, Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West, Kevin Swanson unfolds the dramatic history of Western civilization, highlighting the phenomenal impact that Jesus Christ and his people have had upon the thought, culture, and institutions of the Christian West, as well as tracing the slow but devastating decline of Western civilization and the key factors that have led to our spectacular fall over the centuries. A sobering narrative of gospel hope, this book urges its reader to greater fervency in the work of discipleship and the development of an international vision for the church. This is truly a must-read for any Christian seeking to understand the times and seasons in which we live. You can claim your hardcover copy of Epic, The Rise and Fall of the West by visiting generations.org/store today. That's generations.org/store.
And we're back on the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you, answering the question, why are we paying $5, $6 a gallon for gas? Well, the liberal policies of the Democrat president, Joe Biden, upon oil production has had something of an effect. Not as much as inflation, but it has had an effect upon oil production and oil availability in America. Clinton and George W. Bush took oil production down from 9 million barrels a day to 5 million barrels a day, but Obama and the Trump administrations took it back up to 12.2 million barrels a day. But now Biden has dropped it down to 11.2 million barrels a day, which means we've got about a 10% decrease in oil production domestically. But it's not just that. It's inflation. Inflation is a word economists use to describe the rise in prices due to a flood of money flowing into the economy, mostly by government issuance. The main reason for inflation is that governments spend into a lot of debt. Government-controlled banks then must issue more and more money into the economy. Now, here's a story that will help to explain the relationship between quantitative easing or money printing, government handouts, and inflation. Let's say there were 1,000 people and $1,001 bills in a small community, and you were at the king of this community. Each person was in possession of $1. You decide to print 2,000 more $1 bills, and this would make each dollar bill in the community worth 33 cents. Okay, you had $1,000 bills. Now, more 2,000 $1 bills printed. Now, each dollar bill that each person possessed is now worth 33 cents. Then from the 2,000 $1 bills you printed, you sent every person a $1 bill. It's called a stimmy check. Now, that $1 bill sent to each person in the community is worth 33 cents. And you keep the other $1 you printed for yourself for administrative costs. Okay, we'll stop just for a moment.
Okay.
Okay, now you understand. Each person now has how much each person has.
33 cents and a $1 bill.
Plus a $1 bill, which is worth 33 cents. Yeah. And so each person now has 66 cents.
Yeah.
Well, they used to have a value of $1. Now they got a value of 66 cents. But $2, really $2. So everybody used to have $1 each in their savings account, but at this point, each of the citizens is in possession of two full dollars. But really, each person only has 66 cents in real value, but they're all very happy. You know why they're very happy?
Because they have $2
in their
$2 hand. $1 in each hand.
Yeah, which couldn't be happier.
Their hands are full.
What a wonderful king, they say. And they offer their thanksgivings to the king for giving them $1 of stimmy check, which is only worth 33 cents, and reducing the total savings from $1 to 66 cents in value. Now, there's one little problem for the community. A loaf of bread used to cost 10 cents, but now a loaf of bread is priced at 30 cents. That means that everybody used to be able to afford 10 loaves of bread with their savings of $1, but now they can only afford 6 loaves of bread with their $2. Yet very few of the citizens could figure out what happened, with the exception of the 9-year-olds that read my book.
Nice segue.
How the World Runs.
Nice segue.
You like that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And does the book cost $2 or does it cost 66
cents? Well, it depends. Yeah. Depends. It just went up.
It just went up. Yeah.
Beginning around 2008, the United States Federal Reserve began a practice called quantitative easing. Can everybody say quantitative easing?
No, I'm not even going to attempt it.
This is one way in which the Federal Reserve introduces more money into the economy, or prints more money, as it were. When the federal government wants to spend a huge amount of money all at once, who will lend it the money? Well, President Donald Trump wanted to spend $3 trillion in the spring of 2020, but where would he find the money to borrow? Well, the Federal Reserve bought the bonds through quantitative easing. But where did the Federal Reserve get the money to do this? They just added it to their accounts. Just like that. Kind of neat, huh? Can I do that? Can you do that?
I don't think my bank would allow me to do
they
that.
They don't allow people to do that kind of thing. No. But the Federal Reserve Bank just did it for themselves. The word for this is stealing. Can everybody say stealing?
I thought it was called theft.
Either way. Between 2008 and 2021, the Federal Reserve increased its QE from $500 billion to $9 trillion, which would be about $8.5 trillion. Okay, so it's been doing it. I mean, it did a little bit prior to 2008, but since 2008, it's doing quantitative easing like it's going out of style. It's intoxicating. It's what happens. It's kind of like bank robbing. You know, I interviewed a bank robber one time. He says it's intoxicating. He he's a Christian. He got saved in prison, and I interviewed him one time, and he said, yeah, it's intoxicating. Bank robbery is intoxicating. So there's an intoxicating thing that happens when you're a Federal Reserve that's involved in quantitative easing. The UK increased its QE to $1.4 trillion. The European Union increased their QE to $9 trillion, and we're at $9 trillion. Japan released up to $7 trillion of QE. So they're like addicts. Like they're just sitting there shaking every day trying to get another cup of this stuff. Presidents Donald Trump and Joe Biden softened the impact of the stealing by redistributing cash to American households. These were called stimulus packages. Every adult received $3,200 in three different checks between 2020 and 2021. Well, as it turns out, the quantitative easing amount, though, turned out to be about $15,000, of which we only got $3,000. So the question is, whatever happened to the other $12,000
that
wasn't
go?
In the QE stimulus check? Okay, the point of the above story is that somebody is going to lose in this dishonest system. In the end, everybody loses. The same powerful group of people that sneak inflation into the country by increasing the money supply are the people who calculate the inflation percentage each year. This is used for cost of living increasing and paychecks for workers. Everybody knows that prices are going up, so they would expect to make a little more money from their employers to cover the increased costs. That's why the government produces official inflation numbers each year. For example, the U.S. official consumer price index is supposed to have been 2.48% per year. Based on the official numbers, the median household income increased about 20 to 30% between 1975 and 2021. But actually, the median income has been cut in half since 1975. The median new house in 1975 cost $48,000. Based on a median income of $12,700 during 1975, you could pay off that house in 3.78 years. But in 2021, the median new house was $404,000. And based on a median household income of $67,500, it would take you 6 years to pay it off if you saved every dime. The average new car was priced at $3,800 in 1975, and you could pay it off in 4 months based on a median income of $12,700 back in 1975. But in 2021, the average new car was priced at $41,000 to take you 7.2 months to pay it off. Average four-year public college education costs $7,000 in 1975, take you about 0.5 of your median annual income to pay it off. In 2020, it would take you 1.12 of your median annual income to pay off the same four-year college expense. So in other words, it's about twice as much to pay off the major expenses in your life today as it would have taken you in 1975. So everybody loses with inflation over time. Just keep that in mind. But now let me give you one more allegory. Suppose you are a king in a small country and you want to become very, very wealthy and add to your net worth without directly taxing the people. What would you do? Well, you could break into everybody's home and rob them at night, but then you might be discovered. It's embarrassing, you know. So the following approach is suggested. The first thing you must do is establish a private money printing business, which is run by a board of thugs you appoint to the positions. These thugs begin printing money, which they're supposed to make available to people who wish to borrow it. They receive a small amount in interest, a rate which they set for the banks over which they have control. If there was $1 million of money available in the kingdom, these robbers will print up an extra $2 million. Now, as a king, you wish to spend more money, own more property, and control more of the assets of the kingdom. You would like to purchase the properties and businesses of the kingdom, but how would you do this? Well, you might issue bonds, IOUs, and pay a small amount of interest, like 2% to the people in your kingdom who will buy the bonds. You can also borrow money from the private money printing business run by the board of thugs you appointed at a small amount of interest, like, well, 2%. Once you've collected about $1 million of debt, you can quickly buy up property and assets in the kingdom with all that money. The good news is that everything you've bought just increased in value from $1 million to $3 million because of all the money printing going on. And everybody who lent you money just lost 67% of the value of their money or the value of the bond. Anybody who bought one of your savings bond for $100 lost $67 in value. The interest they get paid at 2% isn't even close to the value they've lost on their money. Get your high-flying business friends involved in this scam, and you can impoverish all the rest of the dumb citizens of your kingdom as well. Now, if our reader can figure this whole system out, well, that's great. But if you can't, well, you can't. And that's how scams work. Dishonest systems are set up so that hardly one in 100 people can figure out what's going on. Okay, so that, my friends, is what is happening. But it's happening on a very, very large scale basis. But where are we now? Well, the time has finally arrived. The time has finally arrived. At some point, Bill, the scam doesn't work anymore. At some point, the scam isn't working anymore. Throwing free money all over the place, living off tomorrow, low interest rates, printing more money, it doesn't work. It's over. It's just over. The Federal Reserve has been forced to increase interest rates, which is the only way they think they can reduce inflation now. But that's going to hurt the debtors. And the debtors are the only ones that really profit off of all of this scam, this quantitative easing and the lowering of interest rates. But now, with the increased interest rates, the debtors are going to be damaged terribly by this, and that will in turn pop the housing bubble and just about every other bubble in the system. The housing crash has already begun. You know, the Denver median house price has dropped $50,000 in 4 weeks. The free fall is already happening. The average for a 30-year mortgage interest rates has burgeoned to 6%. Remember, it used to be down around 2.6%. So it's over doubled in just the last 4 to 5 months. So the median price house in the U.S. has increased from $289,000 to $430,000 between January of 2020 and June of 2022. That means the average house payments, including insurance and taxation, will have over doubled over that period of time based on increased interest rates and inflation expanding. So the average person who buys a house back in 2020, they were paying $1,435 for a monthly payment. Now, based on a 6% interest rate on the house they're buying today, they're going to have to pay $3,112.
Wow.
And so we have a massive increase. That payment would equate to almost 50% of the median household income for Americans, which is estimated right now at $75,500. So if you bought a house today, a median house, you've got the median household income, you're going to consume 50% of your household income in order to just make that house payment on a monthly basis. Well, typically, you know, the guys who are recommending certain budgets for American households would say no more than 30%. So here's my estimate. Housing prices in America are going to have to drop about 40% for Americans to be able to afford a reasonable payment that would consume just 30% of their income. Those prices, that $430,000, is going to have to drop by 40%. It's going to have to drop to about $290,000. It's going to have to pull down to about where it was.
So what you're saying is that all those people who have bought those houses,
they're going to be underwater.
They're going to be underwater.
Yep. They're going to be underwater. It's going to be a bloodbath.
So it's what's called a Ponzi scheme, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is. But friends, for 35 years, actually my first book I wrote in 1989 time frame is called Killer Debt. So for some 35 years, for a long time, for about 35 years, I've been warning people to get out of debt, including mortgage debt. And by the way, I also warned people about cryptocurrency. And we're seeing the breakdown of economy right now. I think young people, they want to trust the system. They think this whole scheme is going to work indefinitely. Guys, it's not. If you trust this system to work indefinitely, man, you are going to be utterly devastated. I'm going to say in the next few years.
If you trust the system, I have some land in Florida. I'm going to say, oh, wait.
And a bridge up in
Brooklyn.
The whole economic zeitgeist is a house of cards. It's an air castle. Our economy is one vast violation of the 8th commandment. You shall not steal. And the 10th commandment, you shall not covet. It's so based in greed. And here's the deal. When the P/E ratio goes as high as it has, that's the price to earnings ratio. And that's just in terms of regular stocks. When the P/E ratio went as high as it did, upwards as high as almost 30, friends, that means that people don't care about the earnings. People don't care about the productivity of the company itself. It's just one big Las Vegas crapshoot. That's what the stock market turned into over the last 3 to 4 years. And at points like that, Christians just have to get out of it. Walk out of the casino. That's all I'm saying. It's time like these that we have to walk out of the casino. Put down the chips, put down the cryptos, put down the stocks and the options, and just back away from it. That's all I'm saying. When the system turns to pure greed, and it's this insatiable, intoxicating greed that becomes the primary driving force in the economy, I'm telling you, my friends, you back out of it. Just back out of the casino. Greed is driving our macroeconomic systems now, and the system is as unstable as it has ever been. I'd say more unstable than it was in 1929. Creating money out of thin air, grabbing as much stimmy check as possible, trying to increase capital by debted investments, using lower and lower interest rates, hoping others will jump in at higher and higher prices on the investments to double and triple our money, creating value out of thin air using cryptocurrency. Man, it's over. This thing's over. let's apply biblical principle to engaging the macroeconomy. And that's what I do for 14-year-olds in this book, How the World Runs and Your Part in It, a book about the practical things of life and economy for everybody. What the Bible says about successful business, work-life, home economies, and national economies. That's what I deal with in this book. And I think the time was right for this, Bill. I mean, I think this is the point at which Christians need to get to understand biblical principles as applied to what is happening in the macroeconomy in 2022. If there was ever a time in which we need to be up to speed with what's going on and apply biblical principles to it, friends, it's right now. Get a copy of How the World Runs and Your Part in It, along with the workbook that goes along with it for a high school level course. All of that available at generations.org. But if you don't want the workbook, so be it. Just read the whole thing out loud. I think this is highly readable for the whole family. Just read the book out loud to the whole family. It's called How the World Runs and Your Part in It. And I do try to bring just about every verse in Scripture that applies to economics to bear in this book, How the World Runs. And I tell you, there is actually about 2,000 references to economy in the Word of God. Jesus uses economic principles throughout his parables. So we draw these things in with this new book, How the World Runs and Your Part in It, available at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson and Bill Jack inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.